Well, I want to say welcome to the out-of-town visitors from Boston. Amen. You guys remember a couple weeks ago when I told you about Amen? Amen's incredible friend, mentor, and one of the guys that put together our home group, which is the Westside Men's Group. He's also the guy, if you remember a couple weeks ago when I said that I called him to ask him how step four was, and he said, call me back with a pen and paper. Which is always a little nerve-wracking. So tonight when I saw him over there, I said, listen, I got notes, and hopefully some of these will go from some notes. I got some books in front of me. The 12 and 12, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I use the books of Alcoholics Anonymous. I like to use the textbooks that were recommended to me that I see other people use. I'm not, I hear a lot of things in the room. Well, first of all, let me give a shout out to Miriam. Miriam, good to see you. And she mentioned last week that I never shouted her out, so I just wanted to give her a shout out right now. Get that out of the way just in case we do get rolling eventually. There you go. Why don't we just all shout it out? That's Miriam. There you go. We cover all the bases for 52 weeks. You know, what I love about this room, this specific room, why I love speaking here, is that this is a room of seekers. This is truly a room of seekers. Because I see you guys in 2 to 3, 4 meetings a week. Some of you I see in 4 or 5 meetings a week. And every time I see you, we just can't wait to get to the next thing. And that is truly a blessing. I want to say that today was not a perfect day for me. Today, I definitely fell short of the glory of God. I definitely fell short of the ideal. Anyone else fall short today for the glory of God? I fell short. I truly did. And I don't say that as like to try to reel you in. I say that because it's true. But on my way in tonight, and I like to pray before we start even. I like to pray, and then we do another prayer, and then I pre-pray, and then pray in front of you, and then Father Richard prays for me, and I get like 8 prayers before it starts. But in one of those prayers, I had tears come to my eyes. Because A, I feel unworthy. I feel unworthy a lot of times when I get up here. It's such an incredible blessing and humility in my life to be able to be the guy that you come to listen to, or at least regurgitate what I've been taught. And secondly, I didn't live up to practicing these principles in all of my affairs today. I didn't live up to them. But I thank God that I know that this is not a program for perfect people. And I thank God that even in our text, it says that we strive for progress and not perfection. And I want to tell you that I really do. On a daily, day-to-day basis, I really do strive for perfection. I want to tell you, I start off my mornings like that. I don't strive for progress. Progress is not even in the top 5. But I usually wind up in progress, I want to tell you. But I wake up and I shoot for perfection. I get on my knees and I ask God that's perfect to come into my life and guide me in all my affairs. And somehow, by the time I get on my knees again, hey Nikki, by the time I get on my knees again at whatever time that is, somehow I have to do a 10th step, and I get to do a 10th step because I've gotten in the way of the perfect ideal of where I'd like to be. But today specifically, Tuesdays is our day off, and we might get to the 8th step tonight. I'm not exact. I mean, we might actually combine next week. So I'm going to get back to Tuesday's my day off, but my week is always busy. It's a fantastic week. And we go from meeting to meeting to work, and we do a little work to try to get to meetings, and then we go to dinner, and we have a meeting before dinner, or we have this whole incredible schedule. The people that have come before me showed me that schedule. You know, I got off the phone with Paulie tonight, and I think he still does a meeting a day, or at least several meetings a week. One of my closest friends, Spike, you know, We believe in meetings. Now, for me, meetings is not the beginning and the end and the all, because I go to some meetings and I'm glad I'm not drinking. That's all I have to say. So it's not, I'm not holding on to the meeting as, the meeting is definitely never going to keep me sober. But I happen to love seeing you guys. And I know there's a whole bunch of people in here that feel the same way. But Tuesday is my day off. It's my one day during the week where I don't take a lot of phone calls. I don't answer business calls, or at least I try not to. And so it's always really rushed. You know, we pack everything in. I'm sure it's like your Saturdays or your Sundays, except we work on the weekends. So I pack everything in on Tuesdays. But Tuesday is also the night that we get to see my grandfather. Now, my grandfather is about to be 88 next month. I'm sorry, in February, he's about to be 88. And my grandfather is a 100% through and through Sicilian, Italian Sicilian. So I don't know if you know what that means, but it means at 88, he's still as mean as when he was 23. There's no difference. You don't grow out of being Sicilian. It's not like something you can recover from. It's in your blood. And usually I'm good, Jimmy. Usually I go in there and I say to Sandy, okay, no matter what comes at us, let's put the armor of God on. We know it's about to come. So let's just bring it on, put it on the armor, and we should be fine. We should get through a dinner unscathed. But tonight I went in with a different attitude. Tonight I went in with a negative attitude. Tonight, as we started entering the door, I didn't put on the whole armor of God. As we started to go towards his door, I started to have the feelings of impending doom. And I started to think that way, and then I started to portray that way, and then I was saying to Sandy on the way in the way in, oh, this is going to be bad. This is really going to be bad. You know, I didn't have any of the things that I've learned about in these books, and I didn't have any of my spiritual warfare tools out. I had already forecasted the war was going to go downhill, and it did. You know, I'm sure that nothing in there happened differently with my grandfather tonight. I'm sure it wasn't any more, you know, I won't use the word abusive because it's not, you know, but you, if you were in my house, you'd use the word abusive, but I'm not going to use the word abusive. It's just the way we speak to each other in my family. But I don't do that anymore. So to me, you know, I'm usually with you guys a lot. I'm with you guys, and we're praying together in the morning, and, you know, what are you doing tonight, and, hey, I'll meet you over here, and let's go to the spiritual thing, and maybe I'll meet you on Sunday, and so I'm not used to being all the time in warfare, you know, and tonight I dropped the ball. Tonight I really dropped the ball, and I reacted, and, you know, I said a curse word, and as I saw it coming out of my mouth, I tried to get it back. So it was the worst curse, you know, for me it was the worst word I could possibly use. I just told you my grandfather's going to turn 88. You imagine how bad I feel. And I saw it coming out of my mouth. So I kind of clipped the end of it. So it came off like, you know, Farouk. You know, I kind of clicked it. I almost caught it. I was very close. I saw it, and I tried to grab it, and it came out, and I got up from the table, and I said, you know, I don't need this type of abuse. I started putting on my best Al-Anon skills, and I said, I'm going to respect, you need to respect my boundaries. You know, that doesn't fly with an 88-year-old Sicilian. That it just makes him more angry. That just added fuel to the fire. As soon as I used the word boundaries, it was off the rails. And I left. I didn't storm out. You know, even here's the funny thing about being in recovery and wanting to please God more than I want to please myself. You know, you can actually stop in behavior that you've had your whole life as it's coming on. You actually have that moment of pause. You can actually do it. You know, as I'm getting up from the table, everything in me is telling me, you don't need to go on with this. You could just sit right back down and apologize. But I needed to make a stand, you know what I mean? I needed to show him that my boundaries had been crossed. So I got up anyway, and I kind of opened up the door, and I wanted to slam the door, but I don't really have that in me right now. You know, I wanted to make more of a scene than, but, you know, I kind of like, my wife was there, and I knew if I left the apartment, if I left the condo, my wife would, you know, fix it, use the Al-Anon magic, and she would fix the whole situation. And she did. She called me. By the time I came up, my grandfather was a different person. But you know, I had already made the mistake. You see, nowhere in the steps, nowhere in anything we've learned over the last 7 weeks says anything about what another person does to us. It all says on how I react to the situation. You know, another book says, sin, you can be angry, but don't sin. I could have been angry at my grandfather. I could have been angry about what he said to me. I didn't have to go to the next step. I could have stopped it right there. Hello, Louis. So nice that you made it. I don't know if you're anything like me, but my family members have a whole different set of directions, and they come with, I must have come with instructions when I came out when I was younger, and it shows the buttons that are available that they can push, and certain reactions will come out. The same thing that Mason can say to me, you know, because we're very close, is that it doesn't really push my buttons. But my grandfather can say the same thing, or my mom could say it in a similar fashion, or even my wife. She must have got a manual when we got married that I don't know about that has to do with the buttons. And I react in a certain way. What does this have to do with the steps? I was speaking to Paul tonight, like I said, and I said, Paul, in the big book, 8 and 9 is completely combined. You can't separate in the big book. By the way, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's different than 6 and 7, is that 8 and 9 is completely explained. It's not any ambiguity that you don't have to work. They will tell you everything that you need to do in 8 and 9, and they spend several pages on it. But they combine it as 8 and 9. We're talking about step 8 tonight. So that threw me in a little bit of a, well, should I do it both together, or because I'm not getting any directions, it's all combined. So I called up Paul, and as you know, I love Paul, and a lot of us follow him, and he's a great guy. And I asked him, how do you separate 8 and 9? He says, you really can't. You could talk a little bit about making the list, but when you're sharing your experience on the steps, it's easy to break it up. But in real life, the steps all flow in your life. So what did I need to do as soon as I came back into that apartment 5 minutes later? I needed to make amends promptly. Now, I needed to let him know that, you know, Grandpa, I'm sorry. You know, I was inappropriate. Regardless of what anything that he did, regardless of what anything that he said, I needed to take responsibility for my own recovery. You know, the big book says that the grouch and the brainstorm is not for us. Justifiable anger is a dubious luxury of other men. That's for people that didn't, you know, live underneath the bridge, or, you know, would drink Ripple wine before 9 a.m. That's not for us. I need to be that much more serious about working these steps and practicing these principles in all my affairs. And as we prayed tonight before the meeting, I realized that, thank God for these steps. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I thank God for a program that when I screw up has exactly what I need to do in every situation that's going to be presented to an alcoholic. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous has almost every answer in my life that I need. And then in the one or two places that I feel that it doesn't, it says, we realize this is about a spiritual kindergarten, Alcoholics Anonymous. It also says that many of us do believe to religious belong to religious denominations, so it's okay to go do other stuff. It's okay to seek outside help. It's okay to get outside counsel. But I want to tell you, I make my home in the 12-step fellowships. There's no reason for me to go elsewhere and stay elsewhere. You know, as long as I do this right, I can do everything else. But if I ever think that, you know what, I'm kind of a spiritual giant sort of witch, at least in my home, when my wife's not around, I'm kind of the master of my castle. And, you know, from time to time, I feel like you guys want to know my opinion, and other people might want to know my opinion, and I start thinking, you know what? I have come pretty far in the last 7 and now 8 years. Maybe it's a little time to flap my wings and get out there. You know, maybe get a degree of some sort, or start to apply myself in another area, or you know what? Maybe I'm going to do straight Bible studies. I'm going to do straight Bible studies, and I'm going to cap it off with church on Sunday. There's nothing in the world that ever took care of my problems, addressed my problems, talked about solutions, understood where I came from, than being in the family of the 12-step fellowships. I'm exactly where I need to be. I pray that I never outgrow this. I pray that I never think that, you know what, I've attained something and now I need to move on. I did try the moving on thing once before. I told you that in my fifth year of sobriety that I decided that, hey Richie, I decided that I wanted to go and open up another store and open up a photo studio and cut down on my meetings, and that I needed to put myself out there. I was 30 years old. I was already 5 years sober. I was dating my fiance at the time, who's my wife now, and bills were paid. Everything was good. In the business I was in, it was a great time. It was flourishing. And I thought that this would be a great time for me to go out and venture out. Still hit my home group once a week, but just spend the rest of the week going to the gym. I even wrote it down, if you can imagine. I wrote it down. I had a four meeting a week schedule, and I took the meetings. I was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I started to slash the meetings. I'll put it on paper. Monday, that's going to be gym time. All right. Tuesday, we'll stay open late at the studio. Wednesday, something else. And Thursday, I'm going to hit my home group. So I started slashing the meetings. You know, I don't know what happened during that time, but somehow I convinced myself that I was actually didn't need this. You guys didn't need me. I didn't need you. And everything fell apart. Not only did I drink, but I lost that studio. I lost all the finances. I lost everything that I was working for. And I had to come back here with my tail between my legs. Now this time around, I want to tell you that I don't take any shortcuts and I don't miss meetings. That's my personal thing. You know, I text messaged one of our friends tonight that is watching the Yankees game. I don't know if he's here tonight. I'm not going to mention him by name. But he's watching the Yankees game. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. But I don't miss meetings for the Yankees game. And like one, I called my sponsor one time, and I used to be in love with the Chicago Bears. For you guys that are older, you remember Michael Jordan? He was unbelievable.
Bulls. Bulls.
What did I say?
Bears.
He was a Bull.
Yeah, whatever he used to play. Whatever. Is the Bears from Chicago?
Yeah.
Brian, you know what I meant, the Bulls, right? Well, I used to love the Bulls. Man, and when I met my wife, she loved the Bulls. I'm from New York. My wife's from Columbia. We love the Bulls. And I called up my sponsor once and I said to him, Jerry, it's the playoffs and it's Michael's last year or is his second. You know, he always was saying that he was going to retire. And I got to listen. I know Thursday's our home group, but I have to see the game. I mean, it was like Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen. It was the team. And they were playing the team that I hated the most. I think it was the Boston Celtics. Well, that woke Armin up right there. That woke him up. And I called up my sponsor. And you know what my sponsor said? My sponsor said, you can miss the meeting tonight, that's fine. You can do anything you want in Alcoholics Anonymous as long as you're willing to pay the price. And then he said, and I'm not saying you're going to pay the price tonight, but if you have any problems next week, why don't you call Michael Jordan? You know what? I got right in that car and I went right to the meeting. And that's the type of people that I grew up around in here. We take this incredibly serious. So when it came to the eighth step tonight, and I was writing down some stuff, and I saw that we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, I started to think about some things, and I realized that this is another action step. And so then I went over the steps, and I started to say to myself, this will be a great point to talk about which steps are action steps and which steps are not action steps. So I got to the first step, and I know we came in on the first step. We came here in the first step. We showed up in the first step. So there has to be an action in showing up and realizing you can't do it on yourself, by yourself. And then the second step, might have been the Boston comment, I'm not sure. The second step is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, and that's action. That's action. The third step, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. That takes action. The fourth step, we made a fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. Not only does that take action, but that also takes work and putting pen to paper. The fifth step, you have to go out and get a spiritual mentor or a guide or a sponsor and tell them everything. You have to show up, tell them everything, and be willing to do that. You know, by the time I got to the sixth step, I realized that all the steps are action steps. It's a process on my good friend John that picked up a medallion tonight. I don't know if he's still in here. He is. It's a process, my brother, as you know, from starting at step one, going all the way through to step 12, and by the time you get to the ninth step, you're amazed before you're halfway through. By the time you get, like, next week, you're amazed before you're halfway through. And here's the crazy thing about Alcoholics Anonymous and 12-step programs. There's a lot of you guys in here, and I'm not pointing you out because I know most of you are seekers. There's a lot of you guys in here that aren't even close to finishing your ninth step, and you're still having miracles happen in your life. So can you imagine if you actually hooked on to this deal, and you actually started writing, putting pen to the paper, sharing it, and finishing it, and getting through the ninth step, can you imagine how smoking hot you would be? Well, I mean, some of you guys are smoking hot, but I'm saying you just go right through that. You'd be like so on fire, you'd have dumped all your stuff, you've developed a new relationship with God, you're starting to feel that freedom come in and that happiness, and you wouldn't want any other way of life. You see, the steps in itself is not the answer, but it sure is an incredible road to take. You know, I hear people talk about steps and more steps, and I hear other people talk about meetings and more meetings. And I hear other people talking about God, and more God. I'll tell you something. The program is a way where you put it all together. Not only do you have balance, but you have a total program. And what I found out in this eighth step is this is just one of those incredible places that's a jump to the next place. Get up and go step. You know, step two brings you to step three. You get ready and you go. Step two, step three. Step four, you get ready. Step five, you go. Step six, you get ready. Step seven, you go. Step eight, you get ready. Nine, you're going to go. What I mean by go is you get into the next place. You get what you need. You remember that game that Zelda's Dragon, the Dungeons and Dragons? You remember that game? You had to like go into different parts of the castle. You get yourself a hat. You get yourself a sword. You get yourself the jewels. But you couldn't go to the next thing until you got that stuff. You couldn't go to the main queen. You couldn't go and slay the dragon if you didn't have a sword. You couldn't go and take on a warrior if you didn't have a shield. You couldn't show up in your flip-flops and try to fight those people in there. You had to get the proper things. That's the same thing about the steps. You need to do the steps. Excuse me, I needed to do the steps, be in the steps in order to go on. And what happened miraculously through it and not really believing it, somewhere in there, right around this time, miraculous things started to happen. I started to have a new freedom and I started to feel the sunlight, you know, on my face and I know that looking around the room, there's a lot of you, maybe all of you, that understand what I'm saying. It's not that the eighth step is just writing a list, although it is writing a list. Although the fourth step is not just writing a list, but it is about writing a list. But it's about becoming willing. Willing. To move on. You know, we have a guy that comes to our group, Don, and he talks about willing, and everybody makes fun and says, willing. But this is one word that I want to tell you something. This is one word that I wish we wouldn't make fun of. Because a lot of people that aren't willing are dying. You know, I wish we'd understand the importance of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. This is not just a catch-all phrase. This is not, as long as you're honest and open-minded and willing, if you're how, you're going to make it. This is like water, food, shelter while you're in a desert. And we're taking this willingness thing like it's nothing. It says it's indispensable. You know what indispensable means? You can't live without it. Honesty, you can't live without it in this program. Look, there's a lot of people in the program that aren't honest, and their program is less than desirable. If they make it and they stay sober or they stay clean, I wouldn't want anything that they have. I'm God's honest truth. It's great that they're staying clean. Great, good for you. So we'll give you your 23-year medallion, and as soon as you get it and everyone claps, nobody even wants to speak to you. That's not what I want. Man, I'm not going to that meeting. I'm not gonna go and hang out with those people over there. I can already tell the way that they are. I'm not open-minded, and I don't want to know anything about it. I'm convinced that I have all the answers. I'm just going to meetings like, kind of like passing the time. I don't need to be honest. I don't need to be open-minded. And willingness, you want me to go pick up somebody where? Do you know, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous and Myron used to sponsor me, he used to take me on 12-step calls and meetings that were not in this area. I mean, he used to say that we're going to go to general service like in, you know, like far. I'd be like, you know, we're in the Gold Coast area. We're in the Broward County area. And he'd be like, you know, guess what? We're going to that meeting. You know, in the book it says here is that if we can't become willing at this point to write down the people we've harmed, then we have not taken the step in that we were willing to do whatever it takes. I don't know where it is, but I read it today. It was good. I have all these post-it notes, but... Well, it does say that we're not willing to do whatever it takes. That we need to be willing to do whatever it takes. Do you want it all? You know, I came up with a new slogan this week. If you can... Can you just do the fan, Dave? I bought this new shirt. It's supposed to let you breathe. And I'm sure for a regular person it would, but it didn't do that for me. How do you know if you're following the program? How do you know if you're in the deal? How do you know if you've taken the steps? How do you know if you're at step 8? You've done everything up to this point that they suggested. They haven't asked you to go out and pull people out of houses yet. They haven't asked you to go and speak in treatment centers yet. They haven't asked you to do anything, although a lot of that stuff happens. You know, you get a couple months and people say to you, would you take this meeting into the house of hope? And what do we say? Absolutely. Because we know that the gifts happen in step 12. We know that the miracle of spiritual experience happens in step 12. But that doesn't mean we're actually at step 12. We could be doing step 12. I was doing step 12 in my eighth month. We were speaking in meetings. I was doing step 12 in my first couple weeks. I was picking up guys that were new and taking them to the meetings. But that doesn't mean, although I was doing step 12, that doesn't mean I was at step 12. I'm just saying for me, and I know there's a popular belief within one of my friends with the initials of LB that the steps can be taken in any order. And I'm sure that they could, but I really do believe that they have been designed for us to like build up some momentum. If I have to come in at step 1 and start writing my amends list at step 9 the second week after I'm come out of the treatment, there's going to be some serious problems. Because the only people that I want to make amends to are like people where I like did not a lot of bad things to. You know, like I want to like make amends for that person that I took a Twinkie from the deli one time in Long Island. You know, I want to go back there so I can actually say that I'm doing the step. And I'm like, you know, I stole a Twinkie from you. But I don't want to go to the person like I destroyed their life. I'm going to keep that one for later on. So the steps are in order for a reason. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. Like I said, they follow with the next line that says, these are indispensable. When making a list of all persons we had harmed, it's going to be painful, embarrassing, and sometimes scary. It's not going to be like where I'm making a list and I'm thinking of the stuff that I've done. And I go back to my fifth step, my fourth step, and I think of the stuff I did to my parents, and I'm happy, joyous, and free when I'm making that list. I did some stuff to my family that I'm totally embarrassed about. Have I been forgiven by them? Absolutely. Has God forgiven me? Absolutely. Have I forgiven me? It's a process. But when I have to make that amends list, when I have to write it down, what does that do? It brings the stuff back up. You want to know if you're in the deal? After you get to the first couple painful things, if you continue to write, you know that you're being entirely willing. Because this is not going to be something where it's going to be easy and soft and, you know, all the things that you've done during your life that you actually start putting yourself into place. And, you know, this is going to come to the nice step next week, but I want to tell you one of the easy ones that I had, but was very painful, is that during my relapse, I told you I already had a store, I already had now a wife. I already had, you know, the respect of the community, and I relapsed. And during my relapse, I relapsed on alcohol, and then I went to drugs. And during my thing of taking drugs, is I started to have delusions of grandeur. Like, I didn't get to the point where I was peeping out of the windows yet. I was still at the point where I was like the king of the island. You know, I saw myself as like king of Fort Lauderdale. And I thought to myself, you would want to be part of my court. You know, so you guys would want to be with me as I took over Fort Lauderdale. And one of the things that I came up with is I work in a mall. And I was taking this substance. And I'm in a sign business. And another guy's in a sign business. And I started to see myself because all night I wouldn't sleep. And all night as I wouldn't sleep, I would come up with these ideas. And I would think to myself, if I built this or if I bought this. And I would write it down on paper. And I would come up with these more ideas and more ideas. And to me, they seemed like incredible ideas. You know, .coms, and I was coming up with a whole bunch of stuff, writing it down, and knew that this was the answer in the sign business, but there was another guy in the mall that's in the sign business. And one night when I hadn't slept the whole night, and I was still in the mall, when the mall opened in the morning, I was writing stuff down all night in the mall, and all the people come and their gates are coming up on their booths, I'm still there, in the clothes from the day before. And I decide this is a good time to let him know that he needs to come and be in business with me. That I want to give this guy the opportunity. I'm kind of like the McDonald's of the mall. And I want to let this guy, like Joe's Hamburger, come in business with me. I just come up with this idea that was going to take over the sign business as we know it. And, you know, with one eye even more closed than it is tonight, I show up at his booth. And in my best speaking, I tell the guy, listen, Kevin, this is a business plan for the future of sign making. And you see by the size of my store as compared to your store, there's going to be no way you're going to be able to stay in business at this point. So if I were you, I would just sell me your business. And I'll just take it over, and at least you'd get something before I just become ridiculously large. Can you imagine, Laura, if someone walked into your shop and said that? Now, when I was in treatment, I realized that I had done this. You can imagine the embarrassment of knowing that I got to go back to this mall. And I got to go to this guy, and I have to tell him, you know, what do you tell someone like, you know, what do you say? I was, highly delusional on seven different substances, and I'm here to make an amends to you about telling you that you need to join up with me. I'm going to take over the mall. You know, what do you do with that? And I got to see him 7 days a week for, who knows, it seems like for the rest of my life now. Guess what I had to do? I had just to write it down. I had to become willing to that it was gonna, I was going to make amends. That's what the step says. Made a list of all persons you had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And you're going to have a sponsor, and you're going to have friends, and you're going to have people, as we speak about in the ninth step, that are going to help you with this stuff. But the reason I bring it up this week is because while you're writing it, you sometimes might not want to write it because you know it's not going to be painless. You know there's going to be some stuff in there. But I want to say to you is, if you do something like I did tonight and you curse at your grandfather or your mother or your wife or your children, and you can be forgiven for that, it seems to me that there's a lot of stuff we can be forgiven for. And even if he didn't forgive me, I'm in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to get through to the 12th step. I want to have a spiritual awakening, and I want to have all the deal. And I can't stop here because it's painful. Step 4 and 5 was painful. Step 4 and 5, I told you there was that one thing I was never going to tell my sponsor. Never. Never. And he saw me walking out of the 5th step, and he saw I was walking with a limp. You know, and I was. He said, did you skimp on any of the steps? Did you not make mortar with enough sand? And I was like, yo, everything's good. And he saw me, you know, walking and you know, not happy, joyous, and free. And he said to me, put the chair down. What didn't you tell me? And I told it to him. And guess what happened? I felt amazing afterwards. Amazing. I felt not great, but I felt amazing. I felt less than, but I felt fantastic. I felt embarrassed, but it was out. You know, I didn't have to carry it anymore. And I had a, you know, I was like, okay. I shared it. I did it. The step says do it. I did it. I move on. Now, this is why I told you that a lot of people do a lot of 5th steps. And I don't know how that works. I understand about doing 5th steps at one, maybe one place in your life. You know, maybe if you're now stealing or now doing something, you have to do 5th step. I haven't had to do another 5th step because let me tell you, I screw up so much, I do a lot of 10 steps. I'm constantly saying, you know what, I was wrong here. I shouldn't have said that. You know, I apologize. You know, please forgive me. I really believe in the 10th step. But on the process of going through to the 10th step, I had to go through the painful process of the 8th step. Who wants to go to the next? Who wants to go to people and say, listen, you know what? This is the way I acted in our neighborhood 20 years ago. And I want to tell you what I did. Who wants to do that? But here's the great thing about it. You don't have to do it in this step. All you have to do is be willing to write it down. Right, Terry? All we did is write it. Willing to write it down. If you're not even willing to write it down, I'm not talking about when we speak about on the 9th step. I'm going to tell you all these amazing things that happen in the 9th step. But if you're not even willing to write it down, how can you go on to the 9th step? If you're not entirely ready, you're not entirely ready. But hopefully we've covered so much ground in the first 7 steps. Hopefully you're feeling this. Even if you, listen, I know you're not all in the 7th step. I know some people are in the 1st step. It doesn't matter. But what if you're just excited about it? Listen, I'm not in shape. But when I see Casey and I see guys that are in shape, I'm excited about someday the possibility of being in shape. I'm thinking, you know, maybe I could get back in shape. You know, maybe if I actually went to the gym and actually used the membership that I had for the last 10 years, I could actually be in shape. That doesn't mean I'm in shape. But it means that I see value. I understand. I'm not scoffing. I'm not looking over at people that are in shape and going, those in shape people. Who are they to walk around in shape? Sure, he's in shape. Probably doesn't work as hard as I do. No. When I see somebody that's further along down the road than me, when I spend time with people like Snow and Paul and a lot of you guys in here and John and Richard, when I spend time with you guys in here, I don't envy what you have. I do want what you have. And I think that that's very healthy. I'm so grateful that people have come before me and continue to come before me and pave the road. Not be okay with the watered down program that I'm just hanging in there, and how did you do today? Well, I'm sober, you know. I don't even hang around a lot of times with people like that. I hang around with people that insist on enjoying life. That they insist on enjoying life. If you're not in, I'm going to look around, I can just tell you, I can pick out 20 people here, one guy, if you that are totally enjoying their lives. If you're not enjoying your lives, don't worry. It's not that something's wrong with you. You're just not doing the work. You know what I mean? I look at me. I want to be in shape. I mean, I feel like I'm in shape. Today I put on a costume, and then we'll end. I put on a costume. It was a, I'm going to be John Travolta for Halloween. I've had the privilege over the last 7 years of being with my friend Snow, and she has a cruise company. We go on a cruise every year. It's an AA cruise, and it's just amazing. This year it's AA and NA and Al-Anon. And I get to go with my wife. Thursday's our 10-year anniversary this Thursday, so I'm just so blessed with that. But this year the theme is 70s, so I'm wearing a John Travolta suit. But and you know, Matt, I still see myself as John Travolta. I mean, because I used to look a little bit like him, and I had hair. You know what I mean? I had a whole bunch of stuff going on. So I put on that white polyester suit today, and I sauntered down the stairs to show Sandy I have the black lapels and the Saturday Night Fever. It wasn't Grease, it's Saturday Night Fever. And I did a pose. I posed like this. I want to tell you something. On my way down, I was so excited to show Sandy the polyester suit and shoot the pose. But there was a mirror on the first floor. Not always what I perceive is correct. Turns out I'm not in shape. But here's what I want to leave with you. I am willing to take a look at it realistically and know that there's more work to be done. I'm signing up for it, and I want the whole deal. Thanks for letting me share.